Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is my co-host, Brad Harvin. How are you doing, Brad?
Hey, what's up, Kyle? I'm happy to be back. I know it's been a couple long weeks, but man, I'm really excited about this episode. I mean, there have been some great reunions. We've had the Eagles when hell freezes over. Even Genesis, I mean, if you want to throw that in there, I mean, you know, Land of Confusion. But tonight,
the
man,
Police.
The police. Absolutely. Absolutely. And
Pink Floyd at Live Aid. I mean, that's probably the best of all.
Yeah, for sure. I think tonight may top it all as we got a little Full Press Fantasy Podcast reunion going on.
And that was the perfect transition, Brad. You're truly our co-host. He'll give you the main host job too. You're so great at that. Great introduction.
Or thank you.
Our former co-host, maybe future co-host, who knows, but certainly co-host today anyway for this episode. We owe that in the present. And what a gift for everyone to have George Carmi return to the show. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing great, man. Warms my heart. Can I get a little teary-eyed right now? You guys are inviting me back so warmly and taking care of me as I come back. It feels great. I love to be back here. Talking about the NFC coaches. It's a great week in football all together. The combine's coming up this weekend. It's, you know, in theory, kicking off right now, but seeing all the drills on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's going to be awesome. I'm a Washington Commander fan, if you guys don't follow me. So it's like, hey, this is where I win. This is the offseason. So this is where I can basically, I have my highest hope of the year is right now. So I'm really looking forward to talking football with you guys. So glad to be back and two good guys, man. I'm happy to be here, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the key word, NFC coaching changes. It's funny, things change, but yet here, George is right back. That's great. We exactly love that some things don't change. I guess, were you happy that things changed in Washington? And that is where we're going to begin with the Washington Commanders here.
Absolutely, man. So this is some context. I'm a season ticket holder of the Commanders. I've been a fan. I was born in 83, so I started becoming a fan as soon as I was born. I have Washington Redskins t-shirts, little baby growing up over there. And, for 30 years, ever since 1999, we had Dan Snyder as our owner. So every 24 years, we had Dan Snyder as our owner, essentially just kind of putting a glass ceiling on what we could become. So having the owner in Josh Harris, having a fresh start with a whole bunch of new changes in D.C., it just has a whole lot of optimism going on. So I think, somebody said, one of the bigger guys, Ian Rappaport, maybe potentially said it, but I think we're the only team in the league that has a brand new owner, a brand new head coach, a brand new offensive coordinator, brand new defensive coordinator all going on at the same time. So it is truly a good fresh start. So it's really exciting in D.C. We'll see if that transpires or anything good during our first season, but at least there's some optimism. And I think the sky is the limit now, where before we had that gray cloud that was kind of lingering over us for so many years.
And to be fair, the owner was there for last season, but he didn't take over at this point. It was further into the summer, June, July, when it officially happened. So he hasn't been part of the free agency and the draft. So to your point, it's first time for everyone. Mm-hmm. I guess at the very least, maybe smart on him, he hired a head coach with previous head coaching experience. So this isn't a first time sort of a situation for Dan Quinn. He's done this before. So Do you like that approach, knowing that there's so much new? Go with someone who has familiarity in this job before.
Absolutely. So, the big hot topic over the offseason was, is Washington going to pursue Ben Johnson? He was a hot topic as a potential candidate. Mike McDonald was also a candidate as well. We're going to talk about him later on the podcast today. I think ultimately it's going to work out in our favor because I think I was interested in Ben Johnson, one of the hottest coordinators out there. But as we're seeing with these new younger coaches, it's kind of hard to put together a good staff. And that's something we'll touch on during our conversation today. I think one thing about Dan Quinn is whatever reason, which I was kind of surprised with, he has some pull in the football industry, whether it's his agents, whether his connections with other coaches around the league, coaches in college football as well. He put together a pretty impressive staff. And I think that's what we're really happy with here in D.C. Because I think, maybe he might not be the, savant in regard to offensive coordinator. He's actually a defensive-minded coach. But I think putting together a staff where he's more of like the CEO role, where he's kind of like overseeing more of like the inspiration, like I think that's kind of something we're excited about. For many, many years, people were talking about, that Kyle Shanahan, that Sean McVay, that school of thinking. I don't know if it was by design or by effect, but basically we're kind of going more the Dan Campbell perspective here in DC. We kind of have like a fiery, loud former football player head coach that's going to try to bring the intensity amongst the players. And then maybe the assistant coach will be more the X's and O's, more the teachers in the locker room. It's kind of the perspective there. We'll see.
And so for anyone who listened to last week's episode, great, you already know how the format's going to work. If you haven't, I would go recommend go checking out the episode I did with Terrence Biggs, our Full Press Raiders managing editor, on the AFC coaches. And essentially what we're going to do is talk about the offensive implications for fantasy football players, and try and come up with actionable advice for each team. Do we think a player potentially go up, go down, maybe both? That we can play it by ear throughout for each team. There might be some situations where so much is still uncertain. But one thing I did do last week, I'm going to do here is, well, did it before the episode, of course. Tracked all the coaching histories and what jobs have they had before. I guess the one thing with Dan Quinn is the previous head coaching experience. It was one stint, but it was in Atlanta for 6 seasons, and he had almost an immediate turnaround for that team. I believe they had, when he took over, they were like a 4-win team. I believe they had a top 5 pick in the draft that year, and I think they started off like 6-1 that very first season in 2015. Can't remember if they made the playoffs that year or not. I think they might have fizzled out at the end of the season, but then they came back super strong in 2016, went all the way to the Super Bowl, and was maybe a quarter and what was it, about a quarter and 3 minutes away from winning.
Yeah, pretty much.
I guess there was a little more than a quarter because they went to overtime. But yes, Falcons fans don't want to dwell on that. We're here to talk about the Commanders. Actually, we'll talk about the Falcons later. But just knowing his previous defensive coordinator experience, he was most recently the DC in Dallas. So I don't know how that makes you feel, George, behind enemy lines sort of aspect here with Dan Quinn.
So I love it. So we'll talk about, I'll kind of give some background on Dan Quinn, we'll parlay it into the offense and kind of look into fantasy. So with Dan Quinn, I'm excited. Just to answer the first question, I think it's fantastic because I think Dallas's defense was awesome last year. I think in the playoffs against your Packers, they basically didn't look so hot, but I think it was more Dak Prescott having a meltdown, throwing two pick sixes, kind of causing some chaos as well. Adam Jones, what sorry, Aaron Jones went basically crazy and running all over the Cowboys as well.
I do say I
But
love Adam Jones as much as Aaron Jones. Green Bay
yeah,
Packers running back, Tool guitarist. Yeah, I'm all for both, to be honest.
absolutely. I was getting so confused anyway. But anyways, I think Dan Quinn is a I think he's a great defensive coordinator. I think he I think it is addition, it's addition to us, subtraction for them. So it kind of hurts the Cowboys by bringing them over here. So I do like the fact that he came over here. He also brought over Jason Witt, who's their defensive backs coach. And I think they really elevated the skill position players over there, like Trayvon Diggs, Daron Bland. Daron Bland's a fifth round pick, leading the NFL history maker in regard to pick sixes and interceptions. I think that was a result of good coaching. I don't think it was, if he was highly talented, it would have been a first or second round pick. So I think it was scheme and coaching in regard to that. But regardless, I don't have to go down that route. I'm happy Dan Quinn's over here. Parlaying it into fantasy football, what I like about Dan is that he has football connections. And I think things that came with us was we have like an influx of coaches. And I think the biggest concern for Washington is the synergy amongst the coaches. We actually got Cliff Kingsbury, who basically, as you guys know from Arizona, as you guys know from USC as a offensive a consultant, last year, he basically is on staff. He's the officially the offensive coordinator. We had Anthony Lynn, who came over from the San Francisco 49ers, former coach. He also helped out with the run game coordinator with Kyle Shanahan. So that's going to bring kind of a run game element to DC. We have Brian Johnson, who was a quarterback's coach for Philadelphia, who basically helped with the development of Jalen Hurts. And then we also have Tevita Pritchard, who was a Stanford quarterback coach, who was also hired as part of our staff there. So I think as a Washington Commander fan, as a Washington Commander content creator with the number two overall selection, it's exciting because we have a bunch of QB whisperers inside of our offensive room that could potentially build an offense around any said quarterback, whether it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, or Drake May. I'm kind of interested in how we go with that. But so what's interesting, like, I guess the thing is, what is our offense going to look like? I'll pause for now because I don't want to ramble on too long, but that's kind of our questions in DC is I have some thoughts on what they potentially could look like, but I'll throw it back to you guys.
Well, just one quick comment I wanted to make. A common criticism I have, maybe not so much on this, but say the Full Press Packers pod every time. We also had Terrence Biggs come on for the coaching changes for that. Raiders hired a new head coach. It was a pretty big deal. And well, I guess they didn't really hire a new head coach. Unlike the last time this was up, they actually kept the interim guy and made him full time, unlike with Bisaccia. But again, as a Packers fan, I'm happy for that. That tangent aside, though, I often complain, especially first time head coaches, how it seems like they run into the flaw of getting a bunch of young people like them. I think like the Chicago Bears, for instance, the Packers fan love to criticize them. Matt Eberflus, first time head coach. Luke Getsky, first time offensive coordinator ever. Everyone he had hired, they all got promoted, so it was the first time they were doing that job. I feel like Dan Quinn's almost gone. Like you said, the tendency to get the young guys, the young, new, not so experienced guys, he went completely opposite. He got two former head coaches on his staff. And that also shows, maybe a young head coach might be intimidated by that. But Dan Quinn's not going to be giving, like I said, Cliff Kingsbury a chance. He was Cardinals head coach. Anthony Lynn was the Chargers head coach as well. So just a quick note there is that, this staff should at least operate as if they know what they're doing because they've all done this job before. Although I did look up, Cliff Kingsbury's only ever been an offensive coordinator once. Now, he was a play calling head coach that designed the offense both at Texas Tech in college from 2013 to 2018, but then also, as you mentioned, George, for the Arizona Cardinals. So he knows how to run an offense and he can, but maybe now I wonder if this might be the best version of his offense because he won't have the head coaching title to juggle with as well.
Absolutely. That's the sell in DC. They're basically saying that Cliff Kingsbury potentially had too much on his plate and was kind of overwhelmed, kind of micromanaging everything. Like he intentionally would show face and walk into the defensive coordinator's room and kind of sit there and kind of be an observer of the room, which obviously you want to do. You want to kind of have a full understanding of your team. But I think just kind of dialing in and kind of focusing on the offense should be beneficial for Kingsbury. I think also just kind of a side note, what Dan Quinn has kind of shared in DC has been like he never had a succession plan in Atlanta. Like when they got to the Super Bowl, when they lost that 28-3 Super Bowl, where it's a big deal, his offensive staff left. Kyle Shanahan went to go get a head coaching job and kind of moved on, and things kind of changed. He didn't really have a offensive mind to kind of pick up the slack because I think I believe he took Raheem Morris with him, maybe Matt LaFleur with him. Like he took a couple coordinators that were in Atlanta with him to San Francisco originally, and it basically kind of emptied the cupboard in Atlanta. So I think what we're doing is kind of having that covering our bases there. But yeah,
Actually,
it was
we'll get on
interesting.
Raheem Morris later. He did actually stay with Atlanta until Dan Quinn was fired. But then he went over west later. But again, we'll touch on Atlanta. We've mentioned way too much Atlanta for it to be the Washington Commanders segment. I guess one last thought, Brad, before I get to you. But Dan Quinn has, he was defensive coordinator for the Seahawks in 2014 when they lost in the Super Bowl. Head coach of the Falcons when they lost in the Super Bowl. The Commanders lose in the Super Bowl. Would that be just a because it's been so long since they've been there? Would that be worth it just to even get there?
Absolutely. Yeah, please. I'll gladly take that any given day. I mean, hopefully third time's a charm and he finally wins one when he's a head coach, but just getting there would be great. Just a playoff win would be great for now. We've been to the playoffs, I think, in 2016, 2020, but we haven't actually won a game in years. So I'll love it. It'd be fantastic to do.
I guess he was the DC in 2013 when they won the Super Bowl. That defense was
Right.
pretty legit that year. So
Oh yeah, absolutely.
yeah, I mean it's there's definitely some good vibes from Quinn there. But Brad, you have any thoughts here on Commanders?
Yeah, just real quick. I mean, you certainly just took the point I was going to bring, but as far as I think what George mentioned about the new owner bringing in a seasoned coach, someone who's done it before, I think that's key. We're kind of seeing a little bit of that shakeup down here in Jacksonville, as far as Peterson kind of changing house. So I'm excited about that for here, but I mean, I imagine George is the same way. And I'm going to go way back. I remember I've mentioned before here that I'm a huge Florida Gator fan. He was Quinn was the defensive coordinator for a couple of years down here in Gainesville, and one of the top defenses when he was here. I mean, just a lot of aggression. I mean, kind of risky a little bit for college, but I mean, I'm sure he's toned it down. That was what, 2011, 2012, something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, I looking over the list, I mean, I think this is a just re really just a great hire, a key hire to kind of bring things together. I guess I just a quick question because I know they're drafting number two. I mean, is Sam Howell off? I mean, is he gonna ride off into the sunset? I mean, I know the kid. He had some very good games last year. Showed some poise. Got sacked way too much. A lot of that was the offensive line fault. Also, him holding on to the ball a lot. But I know this time last year, you were pretty high on him. Going into the season. I know things change because you're drafting number two, but I mean, is Hal just going to be kind of swept to the side?
I believe that's the case. So it's unfortunate for Sam Howell, right? So I think, when we were talking last year, Eric Bieniemy was our offensive coordinator at the time, right? So it's kind of like, we're bringing this whole Kansas City offense over here. What's he
Sure,
going to
sure.
do? Is he going to basically be very dynamic? Sam Howell, I'll be honest with you. I think he has a lot of potential, and I think he is a victim of circumstance, right? Basically, Eric Bieniemy saw some things in him and kind of put and threw him in the deep end, which had some benefits, which also had some flaws, right? I think Washington threw at the highest rate, or like I don't know, I think I forget either one or two to end the year at the highest or second highest rate in the entire NFL. They barely ran the ball. Sam Howell threw the ball over 40 times a game, like in like maybe four, five, six, seven games last year. He had a high rate in regard to that. There's one time where he threw over 51 straight games against the Bears, 51 straight attempts. It was unbelievable. He basically, like Sam Howell showed that he could potentially be a quarterback, but I think he, by the end of the year, he started to get nicked up. I think he started to get kind of started to see ghosts. He started to throw interceptions at a high rate. He actually averaged about one interception a game. If you actually look at his, I think he ended the season with 21, 22 interceptions in regard to that. So he actually definitely had a higher rate there. Today, they just had a press conference like, oh, we like Sam Howell. You're going to keep him around. We'll see how that goes. I can see him staying as a backup quarterback. There's a real shame in that, right? He's dirt cheap. He's, I think, like, he's a fifth round pick. His salary cap is not going to hurt too much. But I think when you get up to number two, when you have the opportunity to get a quarterback, especially in a, it seems like a pretty good quarterback class, actually. So, like, I think, pick your poison. You can pick Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Caleb Williams, potentially. But I think it's going to be probably May or Daniels. And you basically can kind of restart fresh, restart the clock, kind of sell the fans hope too. I think marketing will definitely play a factor into that as well. So I think Sam Howell will probably be on the team. There are some rumors that, like, he could potentially fetch a third round pick somewhere. I think if that's the case, maybe he'll be traded. But I think for the most part, I mean, whatever. I keep him in. Like, he, I mean, he's, I think he's a high, I think he's a low level starter, high end backup in this league. So I think, why not keep him for cheap? And he actually, the ironic thing is, he's actually really good friends with Drake May, who went to UNC together. They grew up in the same area together. So it's kind of a weird dynamic, but they both, like, Drake May went on an interview recently, kind of embracing that. Like, oh, like, I like, it'd be fun to work with Sam. He's kind of awkward at first, but it's my guy. And it's kind of going that direction. So we'll see how it plays
Interesting.
out.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, kind of like a Gardner Minshew situation. I mean, similar to what happened down here. So yeah, I could see that. I can certainly see him being a starter somewhere else down the road for sure. There's certainly a handful of teams I think who would rather have Sam Howell than who they have trotting out there right now.
Brad,
Not
honestly,
but a handful.
I think if the defense wasn't so bad, I feel like if we did not trade Montez Sweat and Chase Young at the trade deadline, we probably would have been, 7 or 8 wins, something in regard to that, as opposed to 4. And then basically we've been drafting like in the teens. I think there would be more of a question of sticking with Sam Howell. But I think the way I think they hit a reboot, like, you know what? This is not where we need to be. Montez Sweat, Chase Young. They're not, I think Montez Sweat's actually pretty legit, but they're like, hey, we're not going to pay that $30 million a year, $25 million a year for these guys. Let them go. And they just hit the reset button and they intentionally tank without saying it out loud. So I think that's what happened.
Fair enough.
So that was one question I had, was the quarterback situation. Because I think before we can really judge this offense, you kind of have to know who the quarterback is. But either way, it'll be a young quarterback, whether they stick with Howell or in the likely scenario they draft somebody. I guess the other question is just Cliff Kingsbury's offense has typically been okay, let's spread them out wide. We'll play four wide receivers a ton. Maybe not so much of Logan Thomas on the field. Maybe
Absolutely
sparingly used,
not.
it might be able to help him in his advanced age too. So, but
Yeah.
all to say, I mean, is Curtis Samuel going to still be on the team? Right now, Dyami Brown is probably that fourth receiver. So, do they even have the personnel to run that offense that Kingsbury wants to run?
I don't think so. I think getting a wide receiver is a pretty high need in Washington. Like right now, they have Terry McLaurin. He has a pretty large contract. He just signed it, I believe, either last year or the year before, but he's locked in. Like, he's like, his dead cap money is outrageous. So he's like guaranteed to be on the team. John Dotson's a rookie pick. He was a rookie 2 years ago. He's going to be on the team. He has a couple more years left on his contract as well. So we have two wide receivers. But as you mentioned, so Cliff Kingsbury was kind of born and bred in the air raid offense where he had four or five wide receivers. You spread it out wide, even flex your running back out wide potentially and kind of get them involved in the passing game as well. So that was the offense that he ran in Arizona. But it's interesting. Like for those of you that are listening, what I do on Tuesdays, and I hope you guys check it out. I know Kyle does every once in a while. We do a Commanders film room, what I do with a couple guys that work for PFF and a guy that works for The Athletic. We basically get together and we break down film, and we looked at Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And we kind of looked at it sequentially over the Arizona Cardinals tenure. And he started to basically go from air raid to more of like a run first team with like more of a 21 set of personnel, which is interesting. So getting two tight ends out there and started to run more. And if you actually break it down, Colin, if you have the stats in front of you, I think Arizona, and it started like by the time he left his last couple of years, was like seventh overall in rushing, eighth overall in rushing, and things like that. They were actually pretty high up there. Like, you know, granted, Kyler Murray was a running quarterback as well, so kind of inflates the stats a little bit. But, you know, James Conner had a breakout year, and, you know, there's definitely some stats in regard to that too. So the offense is going to be interesting. I think Washington needs another wide receiver. I think they'll invest in another running back. I think Brian Robinson actually had a pretty good year under Bieniemy, but I think they were going to probably look for more of a scat back because Antonio Gibson is a free agent. He'll probably go somewhere else. Curtis Samuel, I think they'll cut the tires on him because he's still relatively young. I think he's about 27 or something in regard to that. And but at the same time, it's a great wide receiver class. Wide receivers go pretty deep. You can go in the third round this year, so I think they might. I would be really surprised if you do not get a wide receiver pretty early on in the draft.
I guess my quick takeaway, Brad, and feel free to comment on this, seems like Brian Robinson and Terry McLaurin are both likely pretty safe at the top of their roles. Like, I guess the
Absolutely.
one question I was going to have
I
on Brian
agree.
Robinson, do you think they bring in competition for him, or do they bring in competition for Chris Rodriguez as the main backup,
Chris
assuming
Rodriguez.
Antonio Gibson is gone in free agents?
I agree. So I think they like what they saw in Brian Robinson. I think Eric Bieniemy kind of unlocked the receiving back portion of Brian Robinson. Like, I don't think he was like an Austin Eckler type or anything, but at the same time, I think he was serviceable, and he could catch out of the backfield, and he could get downfield. He's a big body in the open field as well. So Brian Robinson was actually a pretty productive back. I had him on a couple of fantasy teams, and I was, you know, a flex option. I was pretty happy with him. It wasn't really nothing to worry about there. So he was solid, but I wouldn't be surprised if like a Bucky Irving from Oregon or Jalen Wright from Tennessee, someone more of a scat back, kind of like third down receiving backs would be a complement to Brian Robinson as opposed to a supplement, if that makes any sense.
Because with
Supplant
Chris
him, excuse
Rodriguez
me.
already, they've got that sort of hammer in between the
They have
tackles
a
back that can be a true backup. If ever Brian Robinson goes out, Bucky Irving's probably, let's just assume it's him, probably not going to get 20 carries in the game where they need to. That would go to Chris Rodriguez, but whoever they draft or bring in might have a more consistent role even when Robinson's healthy. But
I'm low on Chris Rodriguez, to be honest with you. We don't have to dive down too deep in this hole, but I like Chris Rodriguez, but he was an Eric Bieniemy pick. He actually was like, Eric Bieniemy, he fits my offense. I want him. I selected him. And Eric Bieniemy's not on our team anymore. So it's going to be like, you know, where does he fit? Like, that's one thing you have to kind of re-examine yourself when you're looking at Washington's roster. Like,
interesting, yeah.
they had a previous, you know, a previous regime, previous offense, and now they just have different coaches. Like, how are they going to fit there? You know, you never know. It could be. I thought Chris Rodriguez fell forward. He gets, you know, 4 or 5 yards power back, but like that was Eric Bieniemy's selection. Like, he was like, you know, that's my guy. He would talk about it during the press conference, but now he's no longer there anymore. So how involved is he truly going to be?
True. I mean, again, back to rookie contract, they'll probably still have him on the team, but if he's moved down to the third or fourth guy where he might be healthy scratch a lot of weeks, so then yeah, not much usage there. I guess I'll put you both on the spot. Terry McLaurin or Brian Robinson, who would you rather invest in? We'll say redraft, because I imagine Dynasty, it's probably still McLaurin as much as we love Robinson getting a young, not a first round receiver, but someone who plays like a first round receiver. I'd imagine it's probably McLaurin in Dynasty. Correct me if I'm wrong, but let's go for 2024 only. Who would you rather have, Robinson or McLaurin?
This is a dynasty
No, we'll go for redraft. Because again,
redraft.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine it's McLaurin in Dynasty. Just you know, he's a little bit older than Robinson, but the age cliff at running back comes so much quicker. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you do want
No,
Robinson in Dynasty.
I think short term, so that's interesting. I think Terry McLaurin is going to be a factor in DC for longer. So definitely, so that's the. Because, you know, running backs, there's a high turnover rate. You never really know. Brian Robinson potentially this year it could be supplanted, you know, something in regard to that. I don't see that happening. For me, I like Terry McLaurin. He's an awesome real life player. Is he a productive fantasy player? I think he has a floor. I think he's like a wide receiver 2, 3 flex. Or I think Brian Robinson, I get more touchdowns. Again, I think Terry McLaurin gets 4 or 5 touchdowns a year, while Brian Robinson will get 8. You know what I'm saying? He'll get some catches and he'll run the ball and more touches. And I think touches are king. So, like, I think I would potentially get Brian Robinson because I feel like he'll have more of a heavy load. And Terry McLaurin, I'd rather risk my chances chasing after another wide receiver and getting similar production than Brian. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you can find more wide receivers and more running backs, in my opinion.
Yeah,
Brad, what do you think?
I understand what you're saying because I'm the same way. I was thinking volume wise, going with Robinson. I mean, and the touchdowns. I mean, you definitely hit on that. I mean, I'm leaning Robinson. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
I do think for redraft, that is probably the way I would go. I guess the one thing that we could see happen is McLaurin actually gets a spike in price and is a bit more expensive because of the rookie quarterback.
Sure.
And we may not see as much of an increase drastically in price, from April to May with Brian Robinson as much, especially if they do bring in competition. He might be a lot cheaper and a better value to address.
You know, it's a funny thing that we could potentially be talking about during the summertime. One of your favorite players in fantasy football is a free agent. He's an undersized wide receiver. He used to play in Arizona, and he has a great connection with Cliff Kingsbury. Any idea who could that potentially be?
Well, I mean, Hollywood's a little west of Arizona, but maybe he comes back east to the NFC
Exactly
East.
right. Exactly right. So there's some smoke to potentially getting Hollywood Brown and bringing him over here in DC to kind of fill it as a low price in regard to, I believe he's an unrestricted free agent. So it'll be interesting to bring him over here too.
Believe so
So keep
too.
that in
And
mind.
yeah, with the thought that they might be going for a wide receiver in the draft, Trey McBride's emergence too, it does seem like maybe he's going to get squeezed out. Washington would be a good spot where, talked about it, they want 4 wide receivers anyway. I'd imagine at this point, George, if he, let's say he goes to Washington, would you have him above Jahan Dotson?
So that's a crazy thing. And Brad, I want to apologize to you on the podcast because
All good, man.
I think Jahan Dotson is a talented ass player, man. And honestly, like going into he was a talk of the town in training camp. And like people were like, he is outperforming Terry McLaurin in training camp. And he was poised to have a breakout year. I just think Eric Bieniemy's offense, like Eric Bieniemy left a really bad taste in DC on his way out. And I think that's kind of like, his reputation precedes him around across the league, right? He was kind of stubborn. He kind of was like, this is my way or the highway type of thing. And he phased out Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin. I think in a spread air raid offense where you need shifty wide receivers that could work underneath and that are great route runners, that's Jahan Dotson's game. He's not necessarily a deep threat. He's more of a refined route runner underneath. So I wouldn't count him out. Jahan Dotson, maybe it's me and my stubborn commander's perspective, but I would potentially grab Jahan Dotson relatively late and kind of like, dart throw and see what happens, see if he hits.
Sure.
Yeah, if
Yeah.
Brown gets an increase in values right now, his value, especially Dynasty, isn't that great. But if he gets a bump in
Yeah.
value, you'd be more prone to ignore it. Say McLaurin's still probably the number one, but he
Yeah, I think
maxes out at
so.
maybe a good number two.
Yeah, I agree.
And that maybe he's really truly fighting with Jahan Dotson for that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's enough Commanders talk, that we've commanded enough time with them. I think worthy cause too, though. It's a very interesting offense to talk about. But let's go over to the Seattle Seahawks, who coaching shifts, potentially some player shifts, but I think that looks more like a steady offense that maybe might lose one piece. Tyler Lockett potentially seems like he's been talked about as a they could save cap space by cutting him, and they'll re they really want Jaxon Smith-Njigba to emerge as the number two behind Metcalf. So that might be the only change the Seahawks made, but they certainly, I mean, Pete Carroll's been there for so long, and now he's no longer the head coach of the Seahawks. Mike McDonald, I think you referenced him earlier, George. He was the Ravens defensive coordinator the last 2 seasons, 2022 and 2023. Again, defensive-minded guy, so the offense might have more to do with Ryan Grubb. We talk about Washington. He was Washington University assistant head coach and offensive coordinator for 2 seasons, 2022 and 2023. He had the same role at Fresno State for the previous 3 seasons. So while McDonald doesn't necessarily have, like Dan Quinn, other head coaches on his staff, Grubb, even if it wasn't at the NFL level, at least being assistant head coach in a couple of these stints in college probably does give it some help. But I guess what can we expect from Ryan Grubb in this offense with the Seahawks? Does
You know,
anyone
do you want
know?
to start?
Because he's a college guy, so I don't really have any ideas.
I'm concerned. Like, I think, I don't know how you guys feel. Like, I can kind of start it off. You guys have definitely a more depth conversation than me. I think Obviously Washington, Michael Penix Jr. throws a ball downfield. Romeo Odunze, they had some talented wide receivers there. So there was a lot of production there. So there might be more of a vertical offense. Seattle's offense is pretty appealing. They have some solid running backs there. Zach Charbonnet, Kenneth Walker. They have, they have DK Metcalf. Jackson Smith and Jigba. They have very talented playmakers there. So Geno Smith actually had somewhat of a resurgence late in his career. He's got to re, you know, his contract got renegotiated, restructured. So he's There is a high floor. I just don't know how high the ceiling is because it is unpredictable. And like one thing I'm concerned about, because it's kind of the opposite of what Washington did, right? There's a staff of proven track record coaches that, they might not necessarily be high end, but at the same time, there's a high floor. We don't know what's going to happen in Seattle. I don't know what's going to happen over there. And we'll see. Their defense will be good. I don't know about their offense. We have no idea.
I think having a vet like Geno does help, where he's learned how many offenses in his career. So he'd be able to like learn it and help the players almost as an extra coach. I feel like if Seattle went with a young quarterback, that's where it, I think, could really be a disaster, a la Bryce Young last year. So I think Geno can at least, and do you mention the vertical passing attack? That seems like that's Geno and DK's game. So if that's a key part of that offense, at least those two should continue to connect. It's really, does JSN make that step up in year two? I think that's the massive question mark. Brad, any Seahawks thoughts? Swim in your head or swim in the
No, I
sea?
mean, it's gonna be different. Not seeing Pete Carroll on the sideline for sure. I certainly agree. First time head coach. Bringing in a college guy as the OC. I was definitely concerned there, as George mentioned. Even if he came from another school, man, I know I'm down here in the South. I got that SEC bias, but Pac-12 doesn't play defense, man. I mean,
Absolutely.
so that's a little bit concerning for me, but it could also create some highlight reels. I mean, and if there is that vertical game going with DK, does I mean I don't think it, I don't think his rankings change in a positive way, preseason, but maybe during the season. I mean, maybe things get going, and he could be someone to target later on. But yeah, I gotta see it. I definitely have concerns with bringing in a college offensive coordinator, especially from the Pac-12.
Well, Brad's never been a big DK Metcalf fan anyway, so you might view him as an
He's
easy
warming on
fade.
me. He's warming on.
That's true. I mean, he did
I
try and
like
trade for him in
DK.
the one league I have him in. So yeah, I guess the one thing, George, you mentioned earlier with McLaurin, the high floor, but he doesn't have necessarily the high ceiling. Maybe DK's got a slightly higher ceiling, but it doesn't seem like
I
he
think
can
so.
break into being a top five wide receiver on any given season either. So.
I don't think so. I think DK, he dominates with size and power, and I think he's not necessarily a high volume guy. He'll get you, I think he'll get you touchdowns per year because he's definitely a red zone threat, so they can kind of
Sure.
factor him in regard to that. I don't mind having, I think DK Metcalf, if I have him as a wide receiver two or even a flex, I feel comfortable with that. Or wide receiver three, I'm like, all right, that's perfectly fine. But I don't see him as a wide receiver one in fantasy, in my opinion.
I've
I
in
wouldn't
my
feel comfortable with
dynasty
that.
rankings, I know he's like right at the borderline of that wide receiver one. Sometimes he's 12, sometimes I
14,
change and he's down to like
15,
13,
15.
14, 15, but it seems like that is a big tier there.
Yeah,
So,
definitely.
I guess the one concern I have is with how the running backs are going to be split, because it seems like when they both played, Shane Waldron, the previous offensive coordinator, seemed to really prefer Ken Walker, giving him more of the opportunity. Maybe this new offensive coordinator doesn't think so. I still have Walker ranked high. Maybe I have him ranked too high, though. So I am just slightly apprehensive on Kenneth Walker. I think especially in redraft, I think he might be a fine buy in dynasty because he's still a young running back on a rookie contract. And with another running back there, maybe that helps suppress the value. But I feel like redraft, I maybe don't want as much Ken Walker, might even avoid him entirely.
He's a late for me. He's a flyer that you take in the middle rounds where you're like, all right, I can see the potential with him. Like, I believe in Seattle, they typically are a strong program. They'll probably want to run the ball, because it's kind of what has been their identity for years. But the sharing, in regard to touches, it obviously was shared with Zach Charbonnet quite often. Zach Charbonnet shows some upside as well. So you are kind of concerned about that. So maybe that could be a mid-round. You take Walker, but you also circle back at Charbonnet as a handcuff later on in the draft to kind of cover your bases potentially. You want to go that route with it, So that's how I'd handle that.
Any thoughts on the running backs, Brad, before we run out of here?
I'm tiptoeing around those running backs. I mean, it's not just the volume share. I mean, it's injuries. Really to both of them. Kind of caught the injury bug here and there. Once again, going back to that rookie offensive coordinator too. They would have to fall a long way for me to ponder picking up. Or Walker would have to fall a long way for me to ponder grabbing him. But I'm kind of staying away for me.
Well, apparently all of the NFC South teams, they didn't do so well this year, so they all said, "Coaches, get away." Maybe one team not necessarily by choice, forced to replace someone that was promoted. And in fact, we'll get to that right away. But yeah, we'll talk all four NFC South teams here. We are going to start with the Carolina Panthers. They poached a couple of coaches from their division rival, the Buccaneers, who did win the division last year. Take from the winners, right? Copycat lead. I guess it is funny that we are transitioning away from Seattle because Dave Canales, who is the Panthers' new head coach, he spent a ton of time in Seattle under Pete Carroll. He had various different roles between 2010
Interesting.
and 2022. Started as a wide receivers coach, quarterback coach, passing game coordinator. Couldn't quite get that OC job in Seattle, so he left last year for Tampa, did one season as an offensive coordinator, and now promoted to head coach. And he brings a familiar face with him. Brad Idzik. Should have practiced this before. I did write it wrong. Thought that was enough practice. Apparently, it wasn't. He, kind of like Canales, will be a first-time head coach. Idzik will be a first-time offensive coordinator. He was the Buccaneers wide receiver coach with Canales last year, and he actually was with Seattle for a couple seasons, 2019 to 2022. He was a assistant wide receivers coach, assistant quarterback coach. So I think there was at least one season where Canales was the QB coach. Idzik was working with him as the assistant QB coach, and they worked directly together. Enough to have Canales when he got the OC job in Tampa to bring Idzik with him. The fact that they both have QB coach experience, that seems like the most appealing part for the Panthers because the truth is, these two men are now responsible for the future of Bryce Young. That is their mandate for the organization. We drafted Bryce Young. We don't have a first. We spent it to get him. You guys have to make him work as the franchise QB. It seems like that's what they're being tasked with, right?
Absolutely. I think Carolina is the messiest team in the entire league. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I think David Tepper has taken over the him or Al Davis are basically taking over the reins of the worst owners in the entire NFL. Hat tip to that. I'm thank God Dan Snyder's gone in DC. I just think it's just a mess. I think the Carolina Panthers offense is anemic. I'm staying very, very far away from that. They lack talent. Bryce Young proved to be kind of starstruck, kind of undersized in Carolina. David Canales' claim to fame is that he basically is a QB whisperer. He revamped Baker Mayfield's career. He revamped Geno Smith's career, kind of brought them back together. So potentially he could revamp Bryce Young's career. I just see this as being a mess. I can see David Tepper losing his cool, and I just see this all going. Tepper's a good answer. I think I saw you kind of unmute in regard to that. David Tepper is a perfect description for him. I wouldn't be surprised if Canales is like fired next year, like not 2025, like the following year. I think he's
Sure.
gone. That's how bad the situation is, and I'm staying far away from Carolina. Like the one potential fantasy, because it's a fantasy show, the fantasy impact player you can potentially get, and this is going to sound funny as hell, is Adam Thielen. I had him last year, and he actually, like, I know you're not, I know I saw cause, like, whatever, but like in a PPR league, if you take Adam Thielen
Yeah.
in the PPR league, he'll get you like 8 catches, 50 yards, and it's like 13 points. He's like, that's a nice floor. There's like nothing sexy at all about that. He'll get you whatever he'll get you. He'll get you those high catches, potentially touchdown, whatever every other game. But like it's a high floor, low ceiling, a late round pick. I had him as a one of my starters in like my a team that I won the actual entire fantasy league as one of my starters for most of the year. He kind of faded into the end of the year, but he was just a high volume wide receiver that you potentially could just kind of get really, really late. No one really wants him, so
Sure.
you get him and it's good.
Yeah.
I don't know, Brad seems to understand, right? I don't
Yeah.
know. Do you have any shares of him or no?
I tried to get him several times, especially when he was hot, and then even when he kind of cooled down a little bit, I was still interested because I needed that floor receiver. I could never make a deal happen, but yeah, no, so definitely caught my eye. I mean, with the receptions, but yeah, I mean, he would be the only one on that offense that I would be interested in. I mean, I'm happy to pass the torch for one of the worst run franchises over to Carolina from Jacksonville from a few years ago with the Urban Meyer fiasco. So yeah, I mean, definitely concerns there in Carolina. I mean, having two young coaches. I mean, it's definitely interesting that they, coming from the Pete Carroll tree. I mean, I have nothing but respect for Pete Carroll and everything that he's accomplished. But whoo, man, that is quite a task that they're gonna have to take on in Charlotte for sure.
Feels like they're both promoted too quickly because last year
Yeah.
was the first year Canales ran an offense on his own. Now with Idzik there, he might be the play caller and running the offense primarily, whereas Canales does more of the CEO type of like Dan Quinn, as George mentioned earlier, slightly more hands off, still have influence on the offense, but not necessarily the day-to-day functioning of the offense, play calling and that. Maybe he'll leave that to Idzik. Now, Idzik's never called plays before, so maybe Canales actually wants to retain that. That's a lot to put on a first-year head coach's plate. So yeah, I actually typically say this on the Packers, but I don't know if I did, but I view this as the worst head coaching hire this year. I've
I think
typically
so.
nailed those, to be honest. I called the Urban Meyer one. I called Josh
Yeah.
McDaniels. Now the Josh McDaniels year, the Colts hired Jeff Saturday, so I was actually wrong. That was the worst head coach hire that year. But to digress, the thing with Thielen is, if you invest in him, you both said it. He faded at the end of the year. He's had a couple of wide receiver one seasons, and it seems like the first half of those seasons he's a top three wide receiver, and the second half he's like barely a wide receiver two, and the year-end stats leave him into still being in the top 12. So if you do pick up Thielen and he goes on that hot streak to start the season, sell him then, because
That's a
you
good
know he's
point.
going to cool down, because he was doing that even in Minnesota in his prime. He had a season where he had like I think 8 or 9 consecutive 100-yard games. I think he either tied or broke an NFL record, and then fantasy playoffs, when you needed him most, he was nothing. He just completely disappeared. So that is the one concern with Thielen. But yeah, first half of the season, that's the great investment. I agree with you. I would say back to the same thing I said with Seattle, the running backs. And there are two guys there between Chuba Hubbard and Miles Sanders. Maybe my Canadian bias says to go with Hubbard and the fact that he was getting more carries last year. But this is a new offensive staff coming in. Do they determine that he gets as many carries? Do they want to give it to Miles Sanders first? Now, to be fair, last year's coaching staff started with Sanders, saw how ineffective he was, and went with Hubbard, and he ended up turning out also kind of ineffective, but slightly better. So I wonder if when we get these guys in training camp, maybe these new coaches see the same thing too. So I think I'd be willing to take a late flyer on Hubbard with the expectation people might not think he's the clear starter, and even if he's not, he might be coming out of value. So I think there's a couple of intriguing options on Carolina, but yes, it's an offense I'm not really excited to invest in, and cannot fault anyone who just wants to avoid this offense entirely.
Agreed.
All right, so I guess I can hit two teams really quick. One is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who lost David Canales. Now they kept Todd Bowles as head coach, so we'll get to at the end talking about the teams that only changed offensive coordinators. But there's a common theme with both the Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. So that's the last team we'll talk about with head coach, which is Raheem Morris. Again, outside of David Canales, all the NFC head coaches were defensive-minded guys. I already mentioned it. Morris was defensive coordinator and assistant head coach under Dan Quinn the entire time he was in Atlanta, 2015 to 2020. And then the last 3 seasons, he's been the defensive coordinator with the Rams. Now he, with this new job at the Falcons, kind of poached Zach Robinson and gave him a promotion. He had been an assistant with the Rams since 2019, quarterbacks coach and passing game coordinator the past 2 seasons. But I suppose this will be his first year calling play, since that was the Sean McVay responsibility. Likewise, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers also went to that Sean McVay Rams tree. Liam Cohen, who has spent more time in college, but was the Rams offensive coordinator in 2022. Again, no, not calling plays, but still helping install plan every week for that offense. And probably the idea is that both Robinson and Cohen learn from Sean McVay, and they can bring those influences to these two teams. I don't know if we want to hit them both together, but I suppose we'll start with the Falcons. We've talked about them enough today, I suppose, already. But here we go. Now the actual Falcons segment: Raheem Morris and again Zach Robinson. So, to be honest, this might be another team like Washington where we don't know who the quarterback is, and that's maybe
Right.
the first domino to fall.
That's what I was going to say. And I think, like, I don't know if you mentioned it. I know Raheem Morris for like a year or two actually had some like offensive play calling experience. Like, he's a defensive minded guy, but for whatever reason, he was an offensive coordinator for 1 year or two. It might even have been in LA, but like, which I found pretty surprising because we had connections with Raheem Morris in DC because he was a former coach here, and he actually was a hot topic to potentially come back here if it wasn't Dan Quinn. So take a look at that while I'm talking over here. I think Raheem Morris, I think he's going to lead. He's going to lead the team well. There's going to be a high floor with Raheem Morris there. There's a lot of talent in Atlanta that's not being tapped and used correctly, right? Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, various other, they have a pretty solid offensive line. They have a clearly defined identity. Likes to run the ball pretty well. I see them as a Raheem Morris actually made a comment today at the combine that he's absolutely, he's like, we got to find a quarterback. They're done with Taylor Heineke. They're done with Desmond Ridder, which rightfully so they should be. I see them potentially reuniting. I know it's, they said it recently that like he's not tied to them, but Justin Fields would be a great candidate to be over in Atlanta. He's actually a Georgia Atlanta guy. So I think it's a good fit there. I think it's like in regard to RPO and Bijan Robinson and Justin Fields and using
Yes.
Kyle Pitts effectively, I think that'd be an awesome offense to watch. And I'd be excited to see that happen. So if that is what is, if that's the domino that we're talking about, that'd be interesting to see in Atlanta, but we just don't know where it's going to be. Like I think Jaden Daniels has been kind of tied to them as well. They're kind of interested in him. I can see some potential there as well. But if I was Atlanta, I would basically use my second round pick. I would trade that for Justin Fields. I use my top. Well, I think they have like top 10 or they either have like 8 or 12. I forget what actual number they have. But you can
It's probably
still
eight
get.
again for the third year in a row.
There'll be
Just because
eight. Okay,
that's what they like being.
so 8's a fantastic spot. It's even better than. And what I'm trying to get at is the top prospects in the entire draft are wide receivers and quarterbacks, right? So it's going to be those three quarterbacks flying off the board, then Malik Nabers and, Marvin Harris Jr., then Romeo Odunze. There's going to be all these guys up there, maybe Joe Alt as well. They have an option of getting one of the top three wide receivers in the class, which is a stacked class. So let's say you get Justin Fields, you get, Romeo Odunze, you have Kyle Pitts, you have Drake London, you have Bijan Robinson. That offense is really exciting all of a sudden, right? With a pretty solid offensive line. So, there is some potential in Atlanta. That's the route that I would do if I was. I wouldn't trading up to get a quarterback in 2 or 3, trying to leapfrog us or leapfrog the Patriots or whatever they want to do, and investing multiple first round picks to kind of get up there. I don't like that. I mean, maybe they're a JJ McCarthy candidate. They want to kind of get him there, but like, if I was them, I would do Justin Fields to keep it high, top 10 pick, and get a wide receiver. And the knock on Fields is that he's never surrounded by talent. Give him the talent. Let's see what happens. Maybe give him a good contract.
And they'd have to decide the fifth year option. Maybe they want to forego that. And if he's looking good through the season, they just extend him right away. We don't even know if Fields is going there. So before we speculate too much on that regard, it does look like Morris had a ton of different roles with the Falcons. So he wasn't always the defensive coordinator. He was always the assistant head coach from the start. So it seems like he was Dan Quinn's number two guy there. The way he built the defense together. He started as the defensive backs coach and the defensive passing game coordinator. And he held those roles until 2019. A couple of those seasons, though, he was also a wide receivers coach. So to your
That's what I was
point,
gonna
George, he
say.
has coached both sides. I don't know if he's ever called offensive plays, but that idea, I actually missed that in my research, that he was a wide receivers coach at one point. Eventually, he was the DC in Atlanta in 2020, and that was the year when Dan Quinn was fired, he was named interim head coach as well. So he has, he's a head coach with the Buccaneers as well. So he has head coaching experience coming in. I guess, yeah, the offensive play calling is maybe where there's less experience here, but again, if Zach Robinson and again with the Buccaneers, Liam Cohen have learned from Sean McVay, those two offenses could boom. But yeah, with the Falcons, it's the quarterback, but the skill positions are established. With the Buccaneers, I mean, there might be question of quarterback. Maybe Baker Mayfield doesn't come back. I'd imagine
I
he
think he
might
would.
be inclined to want to, especially if they're offering the most money. Seems like a no-brainer for him. Okay, this team is. I'm familiar with, I mean, it is a new staff. So, I mean, he'd have to learn a new offense, but he is at least, familiar with some weapons. I guess the big question here is Mike Evans. Does he stay or does he go? There's a clash there in my mind, but here we go. Anyone have any projections for Mike Evans? Because it's really tough to know what this offense looks like until we know, especially if Mike Evans is there or not. Because he's produced with poor quarterbacks. He had 13 touchdowns as a rookie with Mike Glennon and Josh McCown. So I think he'll be fine no matter where he goes. It really is. The effect that Baker, if Baker doesn't have Mike Evans, what does this offense look like? I think that's a scary proposition.
I agree. If I was him, I'd go explore my options. I don't know if Brad was to jump on it first. I'm not sure about the. I'm going to go pull up over the cap right now and kind of look at the Buccaneers' salary cap situations. I'm not exactly sure what they have there, but I think Mike, he's pursuing a pretty large contract because it's probably going to be his last one. I just don't know if Tampa Bay is going to be willing to afford him. I'm not really sure about that. I can see him potentially leaving, maybe going to contender. You never know. So it's my Two cents on that.
I know he wanted an extension last year and the Buccaneers didn't give him one. It seems like he's not being totally petty and at the very least listening to their offers. But if there's another offer that's close, he might just say, you know what? You guys could have had this even cheaper last year and you didn't. So I'm despite you, I'm going to leave to somewhere else. Now, if the Buccaneers pay the top dollar, he'll probably just stay, right? Like at a certain point, if they pay more than anyone else, they can outbid him to get him. I think they did just release Shaquille Barrett. So maybe they are trying to free up cap space for this wide receiver QB combo that did just get them to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So according to Over the Cap, literally right now it's live. Actually, they don't have Shaquille Barrett removed yet. I don't believe so, at least. But it says $43 million in team cap space is what they have right now. Typically, you save about like $5 to $8 million for the rookie class coming in. And typically other teams are pretty wise and prudent by saving another $5 or $6 million about like having mid-year additions, people that are injured. So let's shave off like 15 of that right there. So what is it, about $28 million in active cap space? So that's what they have working with. Are they really going to drop 10, 12 million on that on a what? How old is he now? 30-year-old wide receiver? I'm not exactly sure.
He's exactly 30 now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're going to necessarily go that route. I mean, but then again, maybe he's a legacy player that they kind of like want to have him retire in Tampa Bay, but I don't, I see him. My guess would be he leaves Tampa Bay, maybe goes to a contender and tries to win. I think that's what I would do if I were him. And I kind of see that happening.
I mean, if the legacy player, they would have extended him last year, I feel like they really let him. No, he had a great season and sort of bet on himself in a sense. So now that price tag goes up, but if they weren't willing to pay him last year, now they have to pay him even more this year. Yeah. To a certain point, I kind of agree. So then suddenly, I mean, Chris Godwin should get the volume, but all that extra attention and coverage, the rookie Trey Palmer came on nicely. So he might be a good buy in both dynasty and redraft, to be honest, super late in redraft leagues. I feel like Rashad White might be the one winner in that. I mean, I guess the offensive line isn't that great, but at least the run game should remain consistent. He might be used a ton as a receiver as well.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I think is Rashad White the guy to buy in this offense?
Potentially. I mean, I'm also kind of staying away from this offense as well, to be honest with you. I know you're Rashad White, both. I think you are a Rashad White guy in regard to volume. I'm not a big fan of him. Like, I see the volume aspect of it, but I don't know. I'm not necessarily high on this altogether. But one point of note I do want to say, that $43 million that I alluded to before, that's without Baker Mayfield's contract in whatsoever. So just keep that in mind. Like, you know, typically it probably sound like a 1 year, $8 million, $10 million deal, whatever it would be. And that will take up a chunk of change too. So just keep that in mind.
Now, if Baker's demanding more because of the playoff appearance, if they don't retain Evans, maybe that means, yes, okay, we have to keep Baker. We can't lose both. Right. So I'd imagine, if I had to guess, I'd say Baker stays and Evans walks. Baker's
that's
younger.
That's what I'm guessing too.
I think he's younger. Might be close to the same age, but quarterback, maybe a longer lifespan too.
And for context, Jacoby Brissett was signed to Washington for a 1 year, $10 million deal. I say Baker Mayfield's probably comparable to that, right? But, you know, in regard to talent wise and production wise, Baker's probably even a little bit better. And I think with inflation and the salary cap going up, I can see Mayfield getting something around the $8 to $10 to $12 million range. So I kind of see something there. So
I wonder, former first overall pick, I just led you guys the playoffs. I won a playoff game. Does he get to the 20 million? Is that what his demands are?
He's asking for $20 million.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just speculating. Maybe he doesn't quite get there, but I know, like,
I can imagine.
I feel
that.
Like Trubisky signed for maybe like 13, 14 million. I could see it being upwards of 15, to be honest, just because the track record. He's brought he's won playoff games at multiple teams too. It wasn't just a 1 year wonder either. So I think he has that to kind of hold his hat on. And if there's enough teams looking for quarterbacks, maybe there aren't that many teams looking for quarterbacks. Maybe he has to settle, like you're saying, around 12 million because no one else is paying it. So the Bucks are going to stand firm on that offer. And that's really the best offer he's going to get. Yeah. Now, I would imagine it's probably going to be a multi-year contract too. If they're going to go to the trouble of keeping him, I don't see them doing it just 1 year. Okay. If we got to lock this guy up for, let's say, 15 million, we don't want to have to pay him again next year if he keeps doing well. Like, we'd like him to be on the team. So I'd imagine it's at least a 2 year contract, if not more.
Yeah. Typically, from what I understand with contracts, they typically do 3 year contracts with like a third year voidable third year. And they basically spread the signing bonus over 3 years. So it's all the lessons that hit on the salary cap. So real quick, just to give you some additional context for Baker Mayfield. It's funny, we're at a Baker Mayfield podcast right now, but basically on the Panthers, 1 year, $50 million in 2022. That basically rolled into the Panthers Rams. That was that 1 year, $15 million. And then for the Buccaneers, 1 year, $4 million. But I think they weren't really expecting much from him in the Tampa Bay. So things kind of potentially changed. So
that was viewed as a true competition. Like, he might not be the starter. It might be Kyle Trask. I think it
Right.
very quickly, anyone who was reported there, it seemed like almost immediately the first day of mini camp or training camp, certainly
They're like, what are
you
we
know, it's
doing
going to
here?
be Baker. Like that, we got that news, I think, pretty quickly, which maybe not a surprise to anyone who's seen Kyle Trask play. I still have it because he hasn't played in the NFL yet. So he, you know, if he hasn't thrown a pass attempt, he must not be very good at this point. But yeah, I'd imagine he's going to make more than 4 million. Yeah, I again, like, just I wonder if it's closer to what he made with the Panthers there, even if it's just a 1 year 15. Maybe that's what he's hoping for, and if the Bucks are willing to reach it, he stays. So we'll find out soon. One last NFC South team, Clint Kubiak named offensive coordinator for the Saints. This is pretty monumental. The Saints haven't hired a new offensive coordinator, I think, since 2008, when Pete Carmichael was named the OC, and when Sean Payton left, he was retained and he was the offensive coordinator up until last year. So a whole new era with the Saints here, completely. I mean, I'd imagine Michael Thomas isn't on the team. This is going through Chris Olave as the main weapon. I think maybe Kamara is not on the team either. So it could be a ton of turnaround, a ton of young guys there. Okay, Derek Carr, you don't have any weapons anymore, but certainly I think Chris Olave should still be fine. He seemed to produce well with Carr last year.
Olave, I think would be it. I think he'd probably be wide receiver one going into his third year. I like Olave. I think he's a pretty productive wide receiver, young, great route runner. Derek Carr provides a pretty solid floor, not necessarily a high-end quarterback, but get 20, 25 touchdowns per year. Olave probably get a third of those. Michael Thomas, I could see him potentially being gone. Kamara was a product of a lot of dump offs and little, PPR champion a little bit in regard to that, but I don't necessarily see him long term. He, as you mentioned, he's had a pretty big contract, and the Saints do a great job. I don't know if it's a great job, but they are consistently over the cap, and they consistently restructure their contracts to get under the cap, which kind of proves that whole or kind of. Supports the theory that the salary cap doesn't matter, but at the same time, it really does because it restricts the hell out of you.
I thought you were going to
And
say
then
it's
we're,
fake because I hate when people say that, but it doesn't matter. We'll go with that
yeah.
because these GMs are really good at contouring it. But the salary cap is definitely very real for anyone who plays
There's
on
some
Reality
boundaries
Sports
for
Online
sure.
because
There's some
we
boundaries for
can't
sure.
restructure on RSO and make all these fancy moves the GM scam, and we have to go with that real hard cap. So it definitely is real. Thank you,
Exactly. And
George. I'm not
then
saying fake.
I bit my tongue. And then basically, Rashid Shaheed, I think he's definitely a really like, he's more of a deep round, like streamer, week to week for like, waiver wire pickup. But at the same time, get him in the 16th round, get him as a, really late in the draft, kind of have him on your team. He's a, he's a pocket rocket, man. You can basically put him on your team and he might not do anything 1 week. He might blow up and have eight catches, three catches, 100 yards. You have no idea. He was kind of like an explosive type of player. So, something I have in regard to, that's what I have in regard to Saints players for fantasy, I guess.
I think the one thing with Shaheed, though, that's a good point, is the deep threat. He could be a high upside. You know, when you play him, maybe not play him every week, but bye week fill-ins, he's like your first bench wide receiver. If you have any injuries, you can throw him in. He'll know he'll have some high upside weeks, or if he catches a big pass for a touchdown, that will help you win. For your last starter, you're not even looking much of a floor at that point. So you really do want to go for stealing guys, and he might work really well. The truth is, he might actually develop a floor this year. As you mentioned, George, all the cap problems they
That is
have, they probably
true.
can't go out and afford to pay another veteran wide receiver. So he could very well be the second target on this team behind only Chris Olave. And could, you know, if he's a 15th, 16th round pick, maybe he's a little earlier than that, but in the double digit rounds might still be a good value in redraft this year.
Absolutely.
Brad, anything you'd like to
Yeah,
say?
no, yeah, just to piggyback on Shaheed, yeah, I think his I think his value is going to go up, especially with Thomas going out. I mean, he does have a little bit of that Gabe Davis factor. Who drives me crazy, but he always ends up on my team is Gabe Davis. Maybe I'll shift to Shaheed now and see if it works out for me a little bit better. But no, I like that. I think him being able to move into that that two role and complement Olave. I mean, but right now, I mean, Olave would be somebody I would go after, for sheer volume, touchdown potential. But yeah, Shaheed could, I mean, he could be a sleeper, especially in redraft, maybe even dynasty, getting him, trying to get him and stash him, see what happens.
Feels like, I mean, I have Olave ranked in the top 10, I think, of my dynasty wide receivers. It also feels like he's priced there. So I don't think you're really getting him at a discount. But if you're willing to pay full price for Olave, he might be worth getting for that volume. So, the Justin Jeffersons and Ja'Marr Chase, those tier players, CeeDee Lamb, those guys are unobtainable. Like, those managers, They won't even listen to the, here's my entire team, all my picks for the next 4 years. No, nah, I also think I'll stick with CeeDee Lamb. But Olave, while expensive, might be attainable, unlike those other guys are. So if you're having trouble going for the top five, top six wide receivers, he may be a good value in that top 10 range, where he might be one of the cheaper guys in that range.
CeeDee
I also
Lamb
view
was
Michael
awesome,
Pittman
by the
in
way.
that light. Sorry.
I was going to say CeeDee Lamb was an awesome player for me. I got him in a redraft league. I had the seventh pick in the first round. I got Tyreek Hill, snaked back around. I got CeeDee Lamb, PPR league,
ouch.
Game over. Yeah. It was a wrap after that. It was awesome. They were
the zero RB start great. Dominating. Great job.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. It was great. It was fantastic.
Good job. Yeah. So I think those end up being the wide receiver one and two. I think they certainly both finished in the top three. Just to go through Clint Kubiak's career, because he's had a few stints and a few different positions. He was with the Vikings for a while he was with the Vikings at two different stints, I should say. 2013, 2014, he was a quality control coach. I think he went to college. He was in the college ranks for a year, returned into the NFL with the Broncos as an offensive assistant, 2016 to 2018. Then he went back to the Vikings as QB coach, 2019-20, and then was promoted to the Vikings offensive coordinator role in 21. I think that was when Mike Zimmer got fired. So then suddenly whole new staff and maybe Zimmer just fired him because he wasn't running the ball enough. I mean, Zimmer. But then he went back to the Broncos, passing game coordinator and QB coach in 2022, and the passing game coordinator for the 49ers in 2023. So he's seen a lot of different offenses. He's worked with a lot of different quarterbacks. Now he gets Derek Carr. So, there's that.
And not much else. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's one thing I noticed, some of the teams that you're mentioning there, I mean, a little bit more around some of the quarterbacks. So, it's going to be up to them to get some cards for him to play with, man.
One last name I want to mention with, if Kamara gets cut, they might still bring in another running back. But again, with the limited funds, that might be tough to do in free agency. Maybe they go through the draft again. I don't love this rookie running back class. I wonder if Kendre Miller could be a great value this year after not being injured for most of his rookie season, right. Not doing much. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we're going to see a great second year out of Kendre Miller. So dynasty and redraft, I think he's a good
player. Yeah, for sure.
He's not really buying in redraft yet, but he could draft him in redraft, especially early redrafts right now before the draft. He's probably so cheap. If they don't draft, if Kamara gets cut, if they don't draft anyone, that's where we're going to see his price rise. So if you're doing any early redrafts, Kendre Miller might be considered a late stash as opposed to a mid-round pick later in the offseason. So to that point, maybe it is the dynasty buy because you can go buy him in dynasty leagues right now. All right, a couple more teams to finish off with. We've talked so much about Seattle and the Rams, and the Bears kind of combined the two here. So, Luke Getsy's gone. We talked about that in the last episode with Terry. He went, and he's now the OC with the Raiders. But mentioned his name earlier, Shane Waldron, leaving the Seahawks. And named offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears. He had been Seahawks offensive coordinator from 21 to 23. And then he had spent the previous four seasons with the Rams, tight ends coach, QB coach, and then passing game coordinator. And then again, eventually got that offensive coordinator promotion with the Seahawks. Now so Waldron coming on, there's a few people in this offensive room I find interesting. So they've got not only the OC and Shane Waldron, but a passing game coordinator, Thomas Brown. He was the Panthers offensive coordinator last year. That's not the best part of the resume, but he and Waldron seemed to have a connection. They were together with the Rams. Actually, not true. They were together. Well, yeah, one season with the Rams. It looks like Thomas Brown took over the tight end coach after Waldron became the passing game coordinator QB coach. So he kind of, I don't know if he directly seated Waldron, but it looks like it's pretty close to that. So they both worked with Seahawks tight ends. He was also the running backs coach with the Rams for a couple of those seasons. So they at least had one season together with the Rams. And I wonder if, again, it's that Sean McVay sprinkle that you can, it's like fairy dust. So you got Sean McVay, you can fly. So I don't know if I just called Sean McVay Tinkerbell essentially. Wow. That's great.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Now one last name I want to mention. So I've been reserved and refrained on the CFL players so far, but former CFL QB Kerry Joseph has been named the QB coach of the Bears. And he was actually on the Seahawks staff. So again, Waldron is taking to fill his offense. He's taking from people he's worked with before. Kerry Joseph was the assistant wide receivers coach initially, but then maybe a more apt position for a former professional quarterback, Grey Cup winning quarterback, a Grey Cup MVP quarterback. the assistant QB role should be a little better, but maybe similar to what we were saying about Dave Canales and Brad Idzik with Bryce Young. Assuming the Bears draft a quarterback, I guess even if they don't, even if they stick with Justin Fields, development of that QB is going to be integral. And I think I have a little bit more faith here. Waldron has called plays before. He's been in this specific role before, which that's new for the Bears because they didn't hire a first-time offensive coordinator this time. So at least Eberflus
True,
looks like
true.
he learned from that. But having a former professional quarterback in Kerry Joseph help either Fields or say Caleb Williams develop, I think that's going to be key. So I have a, which is I hate to say it with the Packers as a Packers fan, but I feel like I have more faith in the Bears and what they've done with their offensive staff as opposed to the Panthers or even the Buccaneers with Lynn Cohn. I
Yeah,
don't know if you guys think that's fair.
I agree to that.
Yeah, it's definitely a fair assessment. I mean, looks like there's a lot of experience there, a lot of camaraderie amongst those guys. That yeah, it's just who's going to be pulling the trigger from the center. So yeah, and yeah, we'll see how they get developed.
I'd imagine DJ Morris is going to lead this team in targets, no matter who's the quarterback. Cole Kmet seems like he's, he and I think they've extended him, so he's there long term. So those are probably your top two targets, unless, I mean, if they do keep Fields and they trade down, that's maybe how you add more ammunition, add another wide receiver to the mix. But if they just stick with Caleb Williams, the return on Fields might not be enough to get you like a the elite tier prospect, or even the second tier wide receiver prospects in this class. Maybe they go free agency that route. But if Evans is off the market, if Michael Pittman resigns in Indy with T. Higgins being franchise tag, is Darnell Mooney the best option anyway? So they just bring him back. So it just seems like DJ Moore, Cole Kmet are probably locked in to be the top two
Yeah,
targets of the team.
I
Maybe
agree.
less so for Kmet. There might be a chance someone could replace him, but I don't see him going below third on the team in targets.
I agree with that. I think DJ Moore is definitely going to lead. Shout out to the University of Maryland. I think DJ Moore is going to lead and become a high volume wide receiver. He's still a high end wide receiver. Chicago's going to probably walk away with Caleb Williams and also the number 9 overall pick. They could definitely invest into another wide receiver as well. That could be one of the top three that I was telling you about before.
Dude, I
They could
forgot
also
about the
trade.
ninth overall pick. Thanks,
Yeah.
George, for reminding
They could
me and
also
the listeners. That's great.
trade back a little bit more if they wanted to, potentially pick up someone else. Yeah, I have no, you have no idea what they're going to potentially do. I think they would probably fill out the roster more. They got an edge rusher with Montez Sweat, from Washington. So their defense is starting to become more sound. But they also have $73 million in salary cap space, too. So they could potentially add a couple more free agents as well. So I'm just kind of looking at them at Pro Football Reference right now. Looking at their offense, defense. I mean, they're, 18th overall in offense, 20th overall in defense. They definitely need some work all the way around. So we'll see where that money is spent. I was wondering if there was more. I follow the Bears, but not necessarily religiously. I just didn't really know if they had one strength or another, but it seems like they need help across the board.
Brad, anything you'd like to say about the Bears?
Yeah, definitely. Real quick, you mentioned a name, Darnell Mooney. So, in a couple of my dynasty leagues, or I guess in one league, I've been approached like with trades three. I have Mooney, and I've had people coming at me at least 3 times, maybe four, trying to grab him. Am I missing something, or is there? I mean, I can't. I mean, I wish I could tell you exactly what they were offering. It wasn't much. So I kind of declined it for now, but is there anything there, any hype with him getting built up at this point, or am I
I don't know. I
there's a
think
Caleb
he with
Williams
him, it's the
bias?
huge question mark of where does he go? Like,
Yeah.
maybe a team pays him well in free agency, but is he with a
Oh,
good
he is
quarterback?
okay. He's free agent.
So,
Gotcha. Okay.
I mean, I've liked Darnell Mooney in the past, but I think his performances the last couple of years have really, you see what DJ Moore does there. It's like, okay, that's what a number one
Right.
receiver should look like. It does seem like he's better cast as a number two. So maybe with a guy like DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney gets to play his better role. His best season, I think, came when Allen Robinson was in Chicago and the defensive attention wasn't focused primarily on him. Feel like that's what he needs. So he needs he. I mean, I don't know if again. I guess the Bears have the most money to go and pay him to be a number one wide receiver. But if they do that, he wouldn't be their number one wide receiver. So maybe it
Right.
is the best case scenario. Especially if they do draft Caleb Williams, he gets to build around that. Now, I guess Brad, like I'm assuming they're not offering you seconds. It's like third and
No.
fourths or other players.
It's late thirds, maybe an early fourth here or there, but yeah, it's nothing major. But you guys mentioned that he's a free agent. That kind of clarifies, I guess, a little bit of why it's going on.
People might be
So
expecting him to get
I
paid and
must
there's a
have missed
bump.
that. Thinking that he's going to walk. I got you.
I
All
do
right.
wonder, like, maybe the best way isn't to get picks this year. Can you get future picks, Brad? Can you get a couple of 25 thirds And those are picks that you don't necessarily have to make right now. I don't have to
Right.
select a rookie this year. I can wait till the season. If my team's doing well, I need to buy spot starts somewhere. A
Yeah.
random running back is getting a start. Can I go buy him for a third and help me win a week?
I hear you.
Those would be maybe what I'd even rather do as opposed to trade for 24 picks right now.
Gotcha. Agreed. All right.
They might also be cheaper.
I'll
Some
look
people
into
do
that.
value
Yeah.
the time aspect. Some managers
Sure,
won't. So
sure.
you gotta make those offers and find out. That person offering you a third in 24, if you offer them like a second in 25 and like a kick a third back or something along with Mooney, I might
Gotcha.
try and explore something like that. Maybe they see the, or even if you have a third this year, they get the pick a year earlier. They might not view much a difference between the third and the second
Right.
next year, but
Yeah.
that extra flexibility you have in season is really where that pick is key, as opposed
I
to
hear you.
making the rookie pick now.
I hear you. All right.
I guess for a rebuilding team, maybe you just want young players and then the pick now might be better. But again, I think for any contenders, you almost want future picks because that's extra ammunition you can use it when you really want to use it in season, when you want to go win that title. As George mentioned, he won the title this year. So
Yeah.
gotta shout it out one last time. Because George, I guess last team, I would say last but not least, but you actually probably want me to say it's last but least. We're gonna talk about the Eagles now.
Ooh. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean
Kellen.
they're in. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Kellen Moore has been named their offensive coordinator. So they made that's 3 different offensive coordinators in 3 different years. Not necessarily by choice the first time. Their offensive staff was poached to be head coaches elsewhere. And to be fair, the Colts did well this year with the former Eagles OC. But yeah, it's I guess starting new with Kellen Moore, who was once viewed as one of these hot young offensive minds, former
Exactly,
quarterback. Is he going to bring new dynamics? So, George, do you get good feelings from this, or is this a good hire for the Eagles, which makes you feel less good?
It's interesting because I was high on Kellen Moore. I actually thought, like, yeah, when he was the offensive coordinator in Dallas, I believe they had number one or number two overall offense the entire NFL. I thought he was going to be a great addition over in Los Angeles and kind of bring Justin Herbert to the next level. But, obviously that team underachieved and everyone got blown out over there. Maybe it was bad coaching with like leadership or whatever it was with Brandon Staley. We'll see how that goes. Him going over to Philadelphia, I think it's going to bring a some prestige, but at the same time, I think there's a limit now. I think Kellen Moore's been around. We saw his offense in Dallas. We saw his offense in in LA. I kind of think that there's going to be a high floor. I hate saying that over and over again because there is talent in Philadelphia, but at the same time, I think Philadelphia's kind of hitting a wall. I think they crashed and burned. Being on the East Coast, being in DC, a lot of Philadelphia fans, Brown here, some of my best friends from Philadelphia. I think they lost 6 of their last 7 games. There was infighting with Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown. People Right. questioned Sirianni's leadership. They think that he overrided the offensive coordinator that was previously there, Brian Johnson. There seemed to be a lot of issues going on in Philadelphia, and it seemed like there isn't a happy home. So it's like with all that chaos going over there, is it going to transpire onto the field? And we'll see. The NFL is a really fickle league, man. You're in an NFL Super Bowl window 1 week, 1 year, and the next week you're on the downside. We have no idea what's going to happen. So it's a wild card for me. Like, I still will take AJ Brown all day long in fantasy. Devontae Smith is definitely a nice little wide receiver two to wide receiver three to have. He's floating around there. DeAndre Swift, we'll see what happens with him. I had him in a non-PPR league, but he actually was a pretty solid contributor that I kind of, started on and off throughout the year, depending on the week. There is some intriguing options. Jalen Hurts is a fantasy stud, tush push, the greatest quote unquote, I'm quoting for people that are listening, obviously, greatest running back, running quarterback of all time, regarding to rushing touchdown. He's all these cheap touchdowns that he gets every single week. He has a high floor in regard to that, but I don't know. It's a question mark for me. I think the studs that are there, you can rely on heavily. Take AJ Brown, take Jalen Hurts. You're confident with that. I don't know about DeAndre Swift, and we'll see what happens. So that's kind of where I'm at. How do you guys
Well,
feel?
I think you had Swift in the right league because I believe he had a career low in receptions last year, partially because that's the Eagles' offense. They're winning a lot of games, so they didn't need to throw a ton. And when you have AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, you're just going to throw it all to them anyway. So I almost
Absolutely.
think it's better for Swift. As much as this is a great offense, I would prefer him to go to a lesser offense where he's going to catch passes. I think that's, standard leagues, not so much, but most leagues you play in half PPR, full PPR. That's where he'll shine is elsewhere. So I would actually sell DeAndre Swift if he re-signs with the Eagles. Again, talking from a dynasty perspective, but likely not someone I'd want to draft and redraft if he's back with the Eagles. Goes to a team where, like, the situation with the Lions, where he did catch a ton of passes, that's where his true value is in space. Because unfortunately, Doesn't seem like the touchdowns will necessarily go up if Jalen Hurts still keeps running them in. And I think that's really to me, that's the high ceiling aspect of this offense is fantasy wise, but how will they operate football wise? I do wonder. I don't know. Maybe I was going to steal Brad because he's tried to make some good points and I've taken them from him. But if Sirianni gets fired, is this how Kellen Moore becomes a head coach? The interim job with the Eagles, if he does well enough, maybe that's how he
I
keeps it
can see
too.
that.
So did
I can
he
see that for
choose this
sure.
spot knowing he sees all the pitchforks out from the Eagles fans for Sirianni? Does he view this as a spot where he can easily exceed and get to that head coaching job than he would on other teams?
Yeah, I think there's a
Great point.
certain potential with for that. And yeah, I mean, I guess you did steal it a little bit, but I gotta be honest. So my family and I, we were up in Philly the Sunday that they lost to the Cardinals at home. I mean, you want to talk about doom and gloom around there. I mean, that was part of that losing 6 out of 7 to end the year, which and just limping into the playoffs. Now, with Sirianni, some of the talk. My thing with Kellen Moore is I don't know I don't know how he gels with that offense. I mean, I think Jalen Hurts is a different quarterback than Dak, a different quarterback than Justin Herbert, although we didn't really get to see too much of it last year. So that would be a little bit of a I guess my concern him moving over. But I mean, definitely has the weapons on the outside, even still has Goddard out there. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's a little bit of my concern, how that, how that, comes together in Philly, especially with a lot of the barking going on. And but no, great point about him kind of inserting his way in there as a possible interim head coach if things blow up there, which it looks like it could be a ticking time bomb. I mean, kind of crazy, a year removed from the Super Bowl. I mean, even for more, what the last couple years, the talk about a possible head coach, and it seems like a big decline. I mean, I blame everything in LA for the Chargers on Staley. For I mean, just that's just bottom line. But just certainly a tough break. But yeah, I think him kind of moving on over to the East Coast, and he it could benefit his career for sure.
Because yeah, with the Chargers, I don't know that it was his performance, but I think where he lost out is that they brought in Jim Harbaugh, and we talked about this in the previous
Oh
episode with
yeah.
Terry. But
Yeah.
then Harbaugh brought in Greg Roman, who he's worked with, I think at least in one other spot when they were with the 49ers. So
Yeah.
Harbaugh wanted
Right.
his guys there.
Sure.
He might have thought Kellen Moore was good, but he knows Greg Roman is good because he's seen him,
Right.
he's worked with him, he knows
Sure.
exactly what that's going to look like. And I think back to the NFL for so many years, you rely on him to kind of okay, what's I'm sure he knows who Aaron Donald is, but like, yeah, you might want to get up on the league. Sorry, Brad. I needed to. The urban legend continues. I need to throw
No,
one more shade.
that's all right. I deserve that. Sure.
Hey, I mean, none of you deserve that. That honestly, none of you deserve to have that
Oh,
happen.
goodness
So sorry
gracious.
for all Jags fans.
Oh.
But yes, so thankful for everyone who listened. So I guess any final points about the Eagles here or any other offenses, guys, that we didn't get to?
I don't have
Good
anything
shape.
else.
All
Yeah.
right, so outro it is then. And yes, very grateful for George Carmi for rejoining us, last year's co-host. Really appreciate every episode you joined us for, George, and certainly I thought this was an apt topic to have you with, considering how close
Definitely.
you are with the Commanders, and you provided tons of great insights. The whole first half hour of the episode was the Commanders, which is great. It's kind of exactly how I wanted it. That's why I planned it first. So appreciate it so much, George. I know you do tons of great content. You command a lot of space in the content creation world. Command the Mic podcast and such. You and Big Doug collaborating a lot on those film sessions you talked about earlier. So why don't you give the detailed rundown of where people can find and follow you?
No, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. For one, it's awesome, guys. It's definitely like a brotherhood. It's good seeing you guys. You spent a lot of time together last summer. I'm glad to come on the show any given time. Yeah, in regards to content that I produce, you guys can follow me on Twitter at GCarmi21. I have a Commanders lens in regards to my content that I create, but on Mondays I get together with Big Doug, who I've been collaborating with a lot. We have a Super Monday where we basically find local reporters in DC, other big media guys. We basically try to reach out to them, whoever we can get to. We'll get them on the show and just have a kind of casual conversations there. We have PFF Brad coming on this Monday. We're going to talk about, it's kind of like the whole NFL draft in regard to prospects to look out for. And then on Tuesdays, we do Commander's Film Room. So we basically break down film. We have Mark Bullock from The Athletic. We have PFF Nick Akridge, who, because coincidentally, is a Commanders fan, and we just break down, prospects and people that are related to the Commanders world. So check us out. You can find me there and find me on YouTube.
And yes, Brad, really appreciate having you, both my co-hosts, on for this episode again. But yes,
absolutely, it's great to have the band back together, man. It's good to hear everybody.
And yes, and you can follow all of us on X at FPC underscore fantasy pod. Brad's at the rundown underscore BH. I'm at Senra Says. Also want to shout out PA the Second on Twitter at PA underscore II official. He lets us use the song Wallet as our intro and outro music. So appreciate PA for that. Appreciate you, George. Thank you so much for taking your time to stop by at the Full Press Fantasy Pod again. And then, yeah, thank you, Brad. Great co-host as always. I thought this episode was pretty well. It gave people a lot of details to think about.
I know I learned a lot, for sure. So, hopefully our listeners did as well.
Yeah, hopefully our listeners say that every time they listen to the Full Press Fantasy Pod.